If your vibe is the earlier the better, Lowe's early Black Friday deals are a no-brainer. Get up to 35% off select major appliances, and rewards members get free delivery, haul-away, basic installation, and a 2-year Lowe's protection plan when you spend $2,500 or more on select LG major appliances. Valid through 11/4. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Visit Lowe's.com/terms for details. Subject to change. LG member offer excludes Massachusetts, Maryland, Wisconsin, New Jersey, and Florida. Selection varies by location. Select locations only. While supplies last, see Lowe's.com for more details.
Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Amazon Music, or wherever you get your podcasts to listen to our episodes early and ad-free and get access to monthly exclusive episodes. Go to patreon.com/madnesspod. You can also hit subscribe on Apple Podcasts for ad-free episodes. We've got links in our show notes.
The opinions expressed in the following episode do not necessarily reflect those of the Minds of Madness podcast. Listener discretion is advised.
An Idaho state police trooper discovered his wife of 27 years was having an affair with her high school sweetheart. Days later, she was found dead in a bathtub. Initially, the crime scene pointed to suicide. But as officers began their investigation, it was looking more and more like something sinister was at play. Join me now as we discover how a past charge of pouring corn syrup into a gas tank helped prove in court that the killer was off his rocker and built a sinister character profile that helped secure a conviction. You'll hear about jealousy, stalking, infidelity, and learn that a seemingly peaceful acceptance of rejection from a mind of madness doesn't mean they're not plotting revenge. Although Kootenai County Fairgrounds is home of Northern Idaho's State Fair and Rodeo each summer, it might not be everyone's first destination choice in the dead of winter. But for 48-year-old medical clerk Kendi Howard, Kootenai County Fairgrounds was exactly where she needed to be to get where she wanted to go. The fairgrounds were hosting a hot tub sale in January 2021. And Kendi decided to treat herself to a splurge item that would spark some warmth into the frigid winter month. The hot tub was just one of many upgrades Kendi was making to her life in the new year. That same January, she also was in the process of applying for a new job and purchasing a new house in her hometown of Kamiah, Idaho. Kamiah held a special place in Kendi's heart. It was where her parents lived, and also the hometown of her high school sweetheart, Dan Prado. Kendi and Dan met in middle school, dated in high school, and recently rekindled their teenage romance during the pandemic. Dan used his knowledge of real estate to help Kendi purchase her new home in Kamiah. He'd become close with Kendi's family, and the couple had recently exchanged I love yous and were making post-pandemic plans for the future. However, not included in those plans was another Dan, Daniel Howard, Kendi's husband of 27 years. Although he didn't know his wife had moved on already, he knew she'd been making plans to leave him, and he wanted to make sure he got a refund on the hot tub when she was gone for good. Kendi Ann Wilkins was born in Orfino, Idaho, on April 30th, 1972, to Janie and Wendell Wilkins. Kendi and her older brother Brian lived in Kamiah, Idaho until Kendi was 4, and the family moved to Lewiston, Idaho when Kendi started school. Growing up, Kendi enjoyed dance, singing, and running track. She also loved riding her horse, Poppy No-Go, and competed in the rodeo. In high school, Kendi worked with her mom and brother in various restaurants, where her social personality, warm smile, and friendly demeanor earned her repeat customers. After high school, Kendi and her boyfriend Jim welcomed the birth of a baby girl they named Brooke. But the stress of becoming parents at such a young age caused the couple to split. Soon after, Kendi met and married Daniel Charles Howard in 1994. Kendi was only 22 when she married Daniel, a handsome Idaho state trooper who vowed to care for her and her young daughter Brooke as his own. The new family moved several times before settling in Daniel's hometown in Athol, Idaho. After 2 years of marriage, the couple had a son they named Wyatt in 1996. While raising their two children, Kendi worked at Kootenai Health, while Daniel continued to work with the Idaho State Police. Daniel was doing well in his career and was described by one colleague as intelligent, philosophical, hardworking, and dedicated to family. But then, one day in 2011, something happened on the job that would change the course of Daniel's life and start a snowball effect of evil over the next decade. Accidents happen in any job, but for a state trooper on duty to serve and protect, one mistake could have consequences that echo for a lifetime. And when Daniel Howard was pursuing a fugitive one day on duty in 2011, he made a grave mistake. The fugitive was driving a Jeep and backing up into Howard when he fired his gun at the vehicle and accidentally shot and killed the female passenger. Following the shooting, Daniel retreated into a dark period and was diagnosed with post-traumatic stress disorder. He spent the next 9 months on leave, having little to no contact with his fellow troopers. After an outside agency investigated the shooting and ruled it justified, Daniel Howard returned to duty as a state trooper. However, his relationship with the Idaho State Police had changed irrevocably, and Daniel felt like his badge was forever tarnished and that he hadn't been truly absolved of the shooting. 1 year after the shooting, Kendi's daughter welcomed the birth of a daughter, making Kendi a doting grandmother. Kendi loved the new addition to the family and spent much of her time on fun outings with her daughter and granddaughter, visiting waterfalls, pumpkin patches, and going on sleigh rides. But despite the happiness a new birth brought to the family, Kendi and Daniel found that his PTSD was manifesting in their relationship and causing distance between the couple. Tensions came to a boiling point in 2013 when Kendi confessed to Daniel that she'd been having an affair with his best friend Matthew. According to a probable cause affidavit, after Kendi confessed to the affair, Daniel confronted Matthew at his workplace, stripped a piece of metal off his desk, and shoved it at him and his laptop. Daniel then proceeded to take the law into his own hands and launched a campaign of harassment and intimidation against his former best friend. He was later charged with stalking, assault, and property damage for pouring corn syrup into Matthew's vehicles, stealing his guns, his mail, following him in a patrol car, pointing a rifle at him, and even shooting his roof with a shotgun. Daniel admitted to some of the charges and agreed to pay restitution. During his interview with the Kootenai County Sheriff's Office, detectives confronted Daniel about some graffiti he'd written on Matthew's yard. When they informed Daniel that the graffiti was visible from Google Earth, Daniel proudly replied, "Awesome!" Daniel was ordered to serve 120 days in jail and to perform 600 hours of community service. After 19 years on the job, Daniel resigned from the Idaho State Police and admitted in a plea bargain to fraud for using a fictitious name in the title application for a Harley-Davidson motorcycle and misdemeanor possession of a deer without a tag. At sentencing, the judge had a soft spot for Daniel in light of his experience with PTSD and told him, "It's obvious to me that you are not yourself. You were a broken human being. You rehabilitated yourself. A lesser man could not have done that." But within just a few years, Daniel would prove that he was in fact a lesser man when rage and jealousy sent him spiraling even further out of control. Throughout Kendi's affair with Daniel's friend Matthew, Kendi and Daniel remained married, but it wasn't a happy marriage. They continuously fought, and by 2020, pandemic stress had come to a head. On a summer's day in July 2020, Kendi placed a call to 911 to report she'd heard a gunshot and was concerned her husband had killed himself. Kendi told the 911 dispatcher she'd heard the gunshot but couldn't locate her husband.
"Okay, tell me exactly what happened."
It's difficult to hear most of what Kendi was saying to 911, but it's clear she's in a state of panic and has no idea where Daniel is. Eventually, Kendi located Daniel in a field near their home, but he wouldn't talk to her about what had happened with the gun. The 911 operator canceled fire and EMS, but law enforcement still paid a visit to the house to find Daniel and Kendi unharmed and the situation resolved. With their marriage in crisis and the pandemic lockdowns rampant, Kendi started seeking comfort from a simpler time in her life and rekindled a relationship with her high school sweetheart, Dan. While Daniel worked 12-hour shifts in Alaska for 3-week stretches at a time, Kendi spent time with Dan, who was also helping her look for and purchase a new home in Kamiya. She also shared her dreams with Dan about one day opening up her own antique store. Meanwhile, Kendi's co-workers at Kootenai Health, where she worked for nearly 20 years, started noticing Kendi's escalating desperation whenever Daniel was home. Kendi would come to work with visible bruises from fights she'd had with Daniel, which she also started photographing and sending to friends to document the abuse. Whenever Daniel was home, Kendi would actively avoid her home, and if she ever spoke about leaving, Daniel would threaten suicide. By January 2021, Kendi had made a New Year's resolution to meet with a divorce attorney and start the process of dividing up their assets. When confronted with divorce papers, Daniel was enraged that Kendi stood to receive $500,000 from him in the divorce, including some of his retirement benefits from the police force. And while Daniel kept a close eye on Kendi's moves and expenditures, she quickly found a reason to sleep with one eye open. On January 29th, 2021, Kendi's boyfriend Dan received a call from her in the middle of the night. It was a strange phone call, because even though she'd phoned Dan, she wasn't talking directly to him. She was talking to her husband, Daniel, whom she found standing over her bed, dressed all in black and wearing gloves. As Dan was struggling to understand what was happening on the other end of the phone, he heard thumping noises, which he later identified as Kendi trying to escape to the bathroom, and closed the door behind her. Dan then heard Daniel's voice interrogating Kendi about who she was talking to on the phone. At that point, Dan decided to raise the alarm bells with Kendi's parents, who in turn called 911. Officers arrived at the house shortly after. Here's audio recorded from the body cam worn by police who arrived on the scene.
"Are you kidding me? I can't get under control.
At first, officers found it difficult to get anything from Dan, while Kendi only spoke in hushed tones. Realizing they were getting nowhere with this approach, an officer escorted Kendi to the main bedroom to supervise as she packed a bag, though she still wasn't willing to talk.
Do you think you'd be more willing to call us back and talk to us about what happened? Well, I get that, but I guess we're here to help you, and if you can, at least help me if you're going to leave me safe, and then call us back once you're safe.
After realizing he wasn't getting anywhere with Kendi either, the officer decided to refocus on Dan.
The issue is right now she kind of just wants to leave. So she's packed her bag. She told me a little bit about what happened tonight. I think her right now.
While Kendi finished packing and got ready to leave, the officer chatted up Dan, trying to distract and defuse the situation, while still digging for any shred of information.
Is it the long days or the long nights right now in Boston? So, long nights, okay. I've never been there. What do you do in Boston?
After chatting with Daniel and trying in vain to get some more details on what happened, the officers escorted Kendi from the house with her packed bag. Kendi later confided to her boyfriend Dan that when she woke up to find Daniel hovering over her bed that night, it was as though he was looking through her. And even more terrifying, she had spotted a pistol magazine on the floor beside where he was standing. Although she had told the responding officers about this, they couldn't locate a pistol magazine when they arrived. For the next few days, Kendi stayed at her parents' house in Kamiya. Even though she didn't like guns or know how to load one, her father gave her one for protection. Concerned family, friends, and her boyfriend Dan pleaded with Kendi to stay away from the house she shared with Daniel, but Kendi felt she needed to return. She reasoned she had an eye appointment, a job, and pets to care for, and although she was scared to go back to the house, she thought the recent incident with Daniel being confronted by police during the wellness check might have been a wake-up call for his behavior. He almost got caught, Kendi reasoned. He's not dumb enough to try anything like that again. On February 2nd, 2021, Daniel Howard placed a call to 911. He told the dispatcher he'd been signing paperwork when he heard a thud, and when he'd gone upstairs to look at the source of the sound, he found Kendi dead in the bathtub. When police arrived at the home the second time that week, they found Daniel sobbing, tearlessly. He also appeared to be compulsively wiping his hands on his pockets. After heading upstairs, they quickly determined Kendi was deceased in the bathtub.
Dad, I'm not too good. I'm sorry to inform you that your wife is faster.
No, don't die.
As responding officers tried prying contact information from Daniel, he broke out in exaggerated moans of mourning.
Do you want me to tell him anything, or do you want me to stop and come down here to see you?
Sir.
Investigators attempted to get a timeline from Daniel, and it seemed suspicious that he didn't want to notify his son himself.
When was the last time you saw your wife before you were looking at that? How
are
you? How are you? How are
you? How are you?
I don't know. Okay. I really don't know. I'm pulling it out of there.
It's about 11:15.
Maybe 9:30.
9:30 or so?
I think.
Okay.
I don't know if I do wrong. Oh my god.
You want me to give my call? Do you want me to just tell Mike to come here and meet you?
Or what are you gonna tell him?
You want me to let you tell or
Investigators were immediately suspicious of the crime scene and that Kendi's body, which was cold in a warm bathtub, looked as though it had been positioned in an abnormal way. They also noticed the clothes dryer was on when they arrived and had 6 remaining minutes left on its cycle. One officer tested it, timed it, then did the math, and concluded that the dryer must have been started within minutes of Daniel Howard's 911 call. The former Spokane County Medical Examiner initially ruled Kendi had died from a gunshot wound to the mouth and that her manner of death was undetermined. Police and prosecutors weren't convinced, and least convinced was Kendi's daughter Brooke, who immediately called her stepdad and accused him of murdering her mom. In the aftermath of Kendi's death, tensions between Daniel and his stepdaughter erupted when he hosted a yard sale on Kendi's birthday to sell her belongings. When Brooke showed up to collect her mother's things, she discovered she'd been banned from the yard sale. At Kendi's funeral service, her granddaughter spoke about missing her grandma and the time they spent together getting their nails done or baking cookies. Kendi's family waited for justice, but 2 years to the date of her death, Daniel still hadn't been charged. Kendi's daughter Brooke posted on Facebook about the agonizing wait. She wrote, "Most days I remember you and I'm sad. Today I remember you and I'm so angry. I'm angry that someone decided that your life was disposable. I'm angry that he has tried to erase you while pretending to grieve you. Today equals 2 years of waiting. Waiting for a criminal to be held accountable for all the hurt he caused. Before this, I couldn't have imagined the pain and frustration people have to deal with when they are in these legal situations. Finally, family and friends breathed a sigh of relief in April 2023 when Daniel Howard was charged with Kendi's murder." In the opening statements of Kendi's murder trial, Daniel's defense attorney told the jury that the body and gun placement would prove this was a self-inflicted gunshot wound. The defense pointed out that Kendi's DNA was found on the gun, while Daniel Howard's wasn't, arguing Kendi was in a suicidal state at the time of her death because she was unhappy with her weight and ashamed about her affair. Meanwhile, the prosecution had lined up between 50 and 60 witnesses to prove their theory that Kendi was not alive when she was shot, but rather asphyxiated first by Daniel and then shot in the mouth afterward to make it look like a self-inflicted gunshot wound by suicide. Daniel's former colleagues with the Idaho State Police testified he'd been trained on the job and was competent with a technique called lateral vascular neck restraints, which were used to render someone unconscious. Law enforcement in the United States has since banned these same restraint techniques following the George Floyd case. Daniel's former colleagues also testified that he was so skilled at lateral vascular neck restraints that he frequently coached fellow law enforcement officers in the maneuver. Medical experts testified Kendi's body revealed to have 30 instances of blunt force trauma, with bruises to her neck, legs, arms, hands, and her chest. They also pointed out that the downward bullet trajectory has been unlikely for suicide. Medical examiners also noted a second-degree liquid burn on the inside of Kendi's arm that people who just sustained a significant burn wouldn't likely want to be in a hot bath. A trauma surgeon testified that the bathtub would have had more blood in it than was found if Kendi had been alive when the bullet went through her mouth. While still alive, the amount of blood someone would lose in this type of injury would be around 800 milliliters in 1 minute, but the bathwater was somewhat translucent. Prosecutors then provided a demonstration by laying down liquid-absorbing pads on the floor in front of the jury to show the amount of blood loss someone would sustain from a gunshot wound if they'd still been alive at the time of the shooting. The demonstration showed a massive display of blood, much heavier than what was found in the bathtub. This backed up the prosecution's theory that Kendi had been strangled and then shot in the bathtub after she was already deceased, and then a suicide was staged. Kendi's friend's husband also testified, remembering a comment Daniel had made to him in the past that stood out when he bragged about being able to make a murder look like a suicide. Kendi's brother Brian testified that just one day before her death, when he and Daniel were driving together, Daniel had asked Brian if Kendi was having an affair, and Brian confirmed she was.
What did you and he talk about on the way down?
Basically, what was going on. He asked me if Kendi had a boyfriend. We stopped and looked at some property we wanted to buy when the divorce got done.
Where was this property?
Slate Creek.
It's on the way down to the
field? Yeah.
It's off 95?
Yeah, about a few miles from White River.
Okay. Did he ask a lot of questions about Kendi?
Yeah, mostly about if she had a boyfriend.
Okay. And did it seem to you that he was suspicious of her having a boyfriend?
Yes, he was very suspicious.
Did the talk, was he persistent in asking you whether or not she had a boyfriend?
Yes.
And did you give him more information the more persistent he got?
I don't believe so, because I didn't know about the boyfriend. I had a suspicion. I asked, and I was told no, they were just friends. And so I left it at that, you know.
In March 2024, Daniel Howard was convicted of second-degree murder and domestic battery and sentenced to life in prison with no parole. At his sentencing, he offered a sheepish statement to garner sympathy.
I'm not that monster, I assure you, that people portrayed me to be. Kenny and I had 28 years together, and raised a family and had mostly a good marriage and a good life. I worked away from home all the time, and I was gone, and that was probably adjusting most of my problems when I was gone. But I'm not that animal that they portrayed me to be. And I'm monster. And I couldn't have been that monster for 28 years and not
then continued to argue he was innocent, while also taking a snide swipe at the justice system in the same breath.
It is not my intention to anger the court or disrespect the process that I used to believe in and work for. But Your Honor, Isabella sentenced an innocent man to prison. And I love my wife. And I miss her. And I love Jamie and Wendell and my stepdaughter Brooke, who I raised as an infant, and her daughter Kinley, that I helped raise for 5 years when we took him into our house. And I will miss them very much. I do miss them. Words cannot describe the pain that I feel.
Daniel then flexed on his past volunteer work, including being a 4-H leader and a baseball coach.
I'd appreciate the court taking into consideration my service to the country as a Marine with an honorable discharge, to the state of Idaho for over 20 years, in which I was decorated multiple times for saving lives, not taking them, for service to the community through coaching football and baseball for many years, and being a 4-H leader for many years. We provided 1,000 animals to kids in this community that take to the fair and show. We were very involved. I volunteered to help the seniors in the community north of me. Every time there was a windstorm, I'd cut trees from the driveway around the house.
Daniel blamed his volunteer work for causing strain in the marriage and, amazingly, tried to portray his ability to successfully complete probation as a sign he was a good person.
I volunteered a lot, and to the frustration of my wife sometimes, because I was gone even more away from home. And I didn't ask those people to write letters into the court because I didn't want to burden them. So that's why I'm telling you that now. I have successfully completed probation before, like Mr. Johnson said, and I can successfully complete probation for all future maturity. I just want to reiterate that I still love Kennedy's side of the family, J.A. Wendell, Brian. Still love my stepdaughter and miss him very much. And I love my side of the family, my son Wyatt, my dad John, my sister Diane, and I will miss them very much. Thank you, Your Honor. That's all I have.
After Daniel had his chance to speak at his sentencing, the judge didn't hold back.
There's no doubt that they found that you asphyxiated your wife, that you strangled her, that you killed your wife. We don't know exactly what happened that night, how she obtained the bruising, the burn, the broken jaw, and your attorney disputes the state's version of how she got those injuries. We don't know for sure. But what we know, beyond reasonable doubt, is that you strangled your wife, you murdered her, and then you staged her naked body in the bathtub, shot her through the mouth, and tried to pass this off as a suicide. That's proven beyond reasonable doubt.
In a way no one could dispute, the judge also called out his fakery.
From my view of the evidence and from what came out, despite your efforts at the time to appear emotional and sad and distraught, it's clear to me that you're a remorseless killer. And I don't say that lightly. I don't say that lightly at all, because we don't like to think that anybody would be like that. But you're not sorry. The way you treated her family, the way you treated your own family, your own stepdaughter, your granddaughter, with a cold and callous contempt after the murder, it belies your argument to me today that you love these people and that you're sorry. As Brooke indicated, you never even talked to her about this after the fact. Your behavior towards her was contemptuous and unkind.
The judge then went on to quote specific court documents from Daniel's previous charges that showed his character.
When I was reading these, a couple things jumped out at me. This is your neighbor who you were angry with. Now this is him. This isn't a quote from you. This is what he says you told him. Wood claimed Daniel Howard yelled at him, "I don't know where you are at, but I'm going to find you and kill you, you fucker. You fucked up my life. When you least expect it, I will find you."
The judge also brought up more quotes from 10 years ago when Daniel had stalked and harassed his former best friend Matthew for having an affair with Kendi.
And this is a text you sent to another individual. Quote, "I used incredible restraint because the weasel fuck is still breathing." So this is 10 years ago. You're talking about somebody is still alive because you used incredible restraint. During the interview, you were asked if you had threatened to splatter Mr. Wood's brains across the wall. You denied the statement and said the following, quote, "I don't know how many people I told that he's lucky that basically he's breathing because I choose to let him to. Dumb, I mean, I never threatened to kill him. But you were telling people he's breathing because you choose to let him to."
The judge then finally brought it all full circle when he found a foreshadowing quote from Daniel that related specifically to murdering his wife over infidelity.
And then this really jumped out at me, because this is 10 years before you murder your wife. You say, "He's damn lucky I'm a stable guy, or I could just imagine myself. I look back at these guys and I'm thinking, you know these guys that get put in prison because they killed their old ladies who they were fucking around with? I'm like, you know what? Man, you know what? Man, I understand a certain amount why now. Those thoughts going through my mind. Yeah, it's not illegal to think that. Let me tell you something." And so 10 years before, you're saying you understand guys killing their wives. And then 10 years later, you do it.
After his sentencing, Daniel went on a hunger strike and lost 50 pounds in little over a month. Kendi's daughter Brooke posted on Facebook about the family's relief that justice had been served for her mother. It read, "The last 2 years have felt like a lifetime, full of doubts and unanswered questions. The last 24 hours have been a whirlwind. This is only the beginning, but my heart hurts a little less today. I am so thankful and appreciative to everyone who has worked towards this and has kept my mom's memory alive. It means more than I can ever put into words. I struggle with guilt and struggle with not knowing. I wish I could have convinced her to stay with me instead of going home that night. The fear in her voice and on her face when she told me how she woke up with him standing over her will never leave me. Kendi is forever remembered as vibrant and beautiful by her mom, dad, brother, daughter, son, granddaughter, and many friends who loved her. In memory of Kendi, an event called Kendi's Kids is held during the holidays in her honor. The event allows local Idaho children to shop for free for their family members at Christmas time. The event includes shopping, sugar cookies, crafts and Santa pictures, all of the family fun activities that Kendi loved to enjoy with her family. Follow the Minds of Madness on Apple Podcasts, Amazon Music, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. To support the show and get access to ad-free episodes, extra content, and Patreon-exclusive episodes, go to patreon.com/madnesspod. To find us on Instagram and Facebook, search The Minds of Madness, and on Twitter using the handle @MadnessPod. And also, by checking out our sponsors and using our promo codes, you're also helping support the show. We've got all the links in our episode notes. So until next week, thanks for listening.